tornadoes, hurricanes, blizzards. Yeah, we cover it all on Twister Talk.
Somebody asked one time if Donny Marie Osmond could redo that opening. I said no. It's Trisha.
Yeah, hey, why mess with perfection, right?
That's right. Hey, it's Trisha Talk. I'm Gary.
And I'm Brandon.
And we have a great show lined up for you today. It is a good one. And we'll be talking with James Spann, who is the lead forecaster at Channel 3340 in Tuscaloosa, Birmingham, Alabama. He's been with the station for 28 years, and he has had an incredible ride weather-wise. He was a chief forecaster during the April 27, 2011 Dixie outbreak, when he had how many tornadoes? 62 tornadoes, Brandon, in Alabama that day.
That is one heck of an outbreak, and this Gary Jim is somebody that I think you and I would both love to have. You and I would both love to have been able to follow that career path and do weather the way he does it. But, you know, sadly we could not. But I certainly think, you know, in this case, probably a better man got it.
He does. He does a great job. He has a great history with that state. And, you know, he's going to share a lot, folks, about what he saw and what happened, what's going on with everything. Weather-wise, and what he has observed and learned over the years. It's not been an easy path at times, and he talks about some of the rough patches he's gone through. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that, you know, he was a calming voice. If you ever have a chance to check video, you can go on YouTube and type in, you know, Dixie Outbreak 2011 or James Spann. That's S-P-A-N-N. And
I'm on his YouTube channel right now.
You get some good information on that. He also has another way. He also does other things. I'll let you know again. You can check Alabama Weather. That's ALABAMAWX.com. And that's a web page that he runs with, I think, three other people that help him on that. And boy, Alabama Weather history, different stories, current forecast and everything. It's a wonderful place to visit. It's a place to bookmark if you're a weather geek, because some of the stories and some of the history there is just amazing. They talk about some of the crazy weather in Alabama. An outbreak, Brandon, the 1932 outbreak, which not many people know about, which was a significant outbreak in Alabama, because Brandon, in the space of 5 days, mm-hmm. Two tornado days. Each of those days killed 250 people. I'm like,
yeah, just
that's amazing.
Sit and think about that for a minute. 250 plus people killed in each of two different tornado outbreak days there. So
yeah, 3 days apart.
Mm-hmm.
You can't even imagine that. I mean, but he has a great grasp of weather, and so we're gonna, Brandon, we'll go and introduce him, and we'll go from there. And enjoy the interview, folks. You'll hear part one of this today, and you'll hear part two in a few days from now. So much to cover that we had to break it up.
Mm-hmm.
So let's introduce the guy, and James Spann is ready to join us. Special edition of Twister Talk. I'm Gary Flory, and you know, we're going to introduce somebody via the recording, and we'll talk about who this is in a minute, but this was a couple of years ago. Well, more than a couple, but here's what we've got.
This is just incredible.
Yeah, just let's leave the tornado picture off.
Tornado on the ground.
Let me tell you where that is, okay? And if you're watching us, if you're watching us on US 82 or points east, just south of Tuscaloosa, that is coming right at you. This is a tornado emergency for the southern part of Tuscaloosa. You're looking at a live tornado on Tower Link 3340. And again, that seems to be a very sizable tornado. Again, I can't stress the urgency in this.
That is from 2000, December of 2000, as an F4 tornado went through the Tuscaloosa area. And our guest today, who will talk about that, but also his experience as a forecaster for 28 years down in Birmingham and Tuscaloosa, James Spann. James, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Glad to be here.
Yeah, that was I remember seeing that YouTube video not long after that actually happened. That was quite a day. If I remember right, the severe weather had been forecast, but I don't think they were forecasting storms that strong, if I remember.
That was an EF4 or an F4 back then, mm-hmm. and that was 9 days before Christmas. That was on December 16th, 2000, and there's always a chance you could have a big one on any severe weather day down
right.
here, and that we had 11 fatalities with that. Most of them were mobile home fatalities at the Bear Creek Trailer Park. And we're fortunate the death toll wasn't higher, but that was another reminder that the tornado season here, it's November through May, and we stress
yes,
that
is.
Over and over and over, and it's still amazing to me. Some people are surprised whenever we have tornadoes in December or November. Those are two huge months here.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've seen, how many times have we seen footage or reports of very destructive tornadoes, right around Christmas time or, right afterwards. It's amazing. But I know that was just like you watch it. I remember watching the YouTube video going, he's doing a great job covering that. But I remember you're listing the areas that the tornado's heading to and giving people a heads up. If you live here, it's coming your way. And I thought that caught me off. That was really neat because I said, he's giving them ample time. Say, this is where we live. This is all I know where we are. So get undercover or get to ground if you can. That was, man.
Well, people, especially now, they have limited map skill.
Uh-huh.
We have a geography literacy problem here, and showing people a map on television, I'll be honest with you, for a lot of folks, that's like Russian, or they just can't read it. And
right.
You have to relate to people, places that they understand,
mm-hmm.
a Walmart, a barbecue joint, a barn, anything.
Yeah.
And I've been here forever and have a unique knowledge of the geography and lay of the land, and so that information is useless except when there are tornadoes flying around here. And that's one thing I tell younger people who want to do this. You have to understand the geography.
Right.
You can't just look at a map and sit in a weather office all day. You've got to get out every day. And that's the one advantage of school programs for almost 50 years is that I have a pretty good grasp of the land around here.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to know what you're talking about in regards to geographic location. Just saying, if you look at the map and that's where it is, most people, you're right, they're going to go, huh? And they're not going to understand. But if you say, hey, if you live at this street and this street, it's going to be knocking on your door in about 5 minutes, and you're more likely to take it seriously. It is interesting how our comprehensive skills have slid back down the road in the last 20 years. It's kind of been sad to see because you got kids in school can't tell you where the capitals of different states are. Even if you tell them where the capital in the state, they go, what?
And it's okay. I mean, like the phones have changed everything. You get turn-by-turn directions.
Oh, yeah.
Quite frankly, you don't have to have good map skills in most cases. And so you can't really fault the people or be condescending. You just got to understand that culture
right.
has changed and the way people think has changed. And they just don't use maps anymore.
Yeah.
You've got to be better at using well-known landmarks for people when there are tornadoes. Let's say there's a tornado 14 miles southwest of Clanton, Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows where that is, even if you live there. But if you can tell people it's a Jim's Pit Barbecue, everybody knows where that is.
Right, right, absolutely. Well, Brandon, I know you got a couple questions you want to ask James, so I'll let you get going with what you put together, and we'll go from there.
All right. Well, certainly, James, thank you for taking some time to be with us on the show today here. And now I would first of all like to ask if you could, for those not familiar, if you could describe a little bit about how you became interested in weather. I saw from the background here that it's kind of always been an on and off interest for you. But if you could maybe elaborate on it just a little bit to kind of give our listeners a better idea here.
Well, I think people that do this for a living, they were born with it. There's no off. It's always on. And you've had an internal fascination with weather as long as you can remember. That's my situation. I just love storms. The other friends of mine hated them when we were little kids. I loved them. I was fascinated by the things. And then Due to family circumstances, we had to move to Tuscaloosa, Alabama when I was an older child. Mm-hmm. I'm originally from a small town in South Alabama, but Tuscaloosa, Alabama is kind of like Moore, Oklahoma. It's one of the weather capitals of the world. And living as an older child in the decade of the 1970s in Tuscaloosa, I thought the world was ending. The weather was so violent, just constant violent tornado outbreaks. And having a ham radio license and fascinated by weather and the ability to communicate from your car, which was, you know, kind of a unique thing in the 70s, it just all meshed. And I learned later you could do this for a living. My first major in college was electrical engineering. And I just thought I'd be an engineer, but I learned that you could do weather for a living. So I changed majors and finished in meteorology, and it's been a great ride.
Well, let's take a moment and talk about those 70s, because, like I said, that was a crazy decade for severe weather. I mean, my gosh, living here in Columbus in May of 73, literally, James, every Tuesday and Friday, we were under tornado watches and almost as many tornado warnings those same days. It was like everything had just shifted east over us that May. I remember that because I would be out with friends and all of a sudden hear the sirens going off and everybody be running to their basement. It became just like a ritual for about a month and a half, and then it kind of backed off. But the super outbreak of 74, that's still so much in everybody's mind, and the 50th anniversary that's happening now. You played a role in part of that in learning weather coverage and with your ham radio. If you could talk about that a moment, that'd be great.
Yeah, I can't believe it's the 50th anniversary. Mm. We did our show Monday night with Greg Forbes and Joe Golden, Ken Graham, the director of the National Weather Service, and we all reminisced that event. In that Greg was involved in it heavily with Dr. Fujita. Mm-hmm. But I was a senior in high school. I graduated in 1974. My hobby was ham radio, and we could communicate. There were no cell phones in 1974. Mm-hmm. That night, I worked as a volunteer at the Tuscaloosa County Civil Defense. That's what EMA was called back then.
Okay.
And then there was an urgent need after the event was winding down for help, for communication volunteers. They allowed me 3 days away from high school to volunteer, and they sent me first to Jasper, Alabama, which was just hit hard. They put me in the hospital trying to get a communication link between the hospital and the relief agencies in Birmingham. And quite frankly, I saw things in that emergency room that a 17-year-old should never see. And I've not talked about it publicly or privately, and I don't want to. But I think I had to see that to kind of prepare the way for where my life would go. Mm-hmm. And then after Jasper, we went to Guin, Alabama. And analog in your part of the world was Xenia, Ohio.
Yes.
The damage in both of those communities were about the same. These were violent upper end F5s. And I've never seen anything like that. And again, I thought the world was ending.
Oh, I can imagine, and,
We went through several other communities establishing these communication paths. And it was just... It was a humanitarian crisis, and it's generational. I tell people all the time, these things happen about once every 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. 2011 is an analog to 1974. We had a generational event across the southern U.S. in 1932. We had one in 1884.
Mm-hmm.
So we're probably 25 years out from the next one, and I'll probably be at the cemetery by then. But 1974 was incredible.
Yeah, that was especially the one in Guin, Alabama. That was just amazing. I think I've read some articles that Fujita thought he considered that maybe the strongest tornado of the whole outbreak. Might have been that one, especially when it went through the state forest down there, the national forest, and left a scar of the path that you could actually see from space. I think for almost a year, when the tornado went through there, then toward Huntsville. So. I just remember reading that because as bad as Xenia was a horrific storm. Everyone says that one down there seemed to, it was right up with Xenia as far as strength. It was incredible that it tore through that forest and, you know, lasted to over the path length, I believe, was over almost 100 miles, if I'm correct, somewhere in the vicinity. And I know it lifted just before it got to Huntsville. And then another one was put down. But, yeah, for a 17-year-old seeing that, I can't even imagine. But like you said, that fired up your weather desire even more. So
yeah, and I just thought I'd do it as a volunteer all my life, ham radio volunteer, and be a spotter. And I just never thought. Nobody ever told me it was a viable career option.
Yeah.
and Because of family circumstances, I've had to work all my life. I went to work when I was seven, and when I was in high school, I worked at a radio station. I worked there before school, after school. I never went to a prom, homecoming dance. I mean, I was a social zero, but that radio experience was good, too, in that you learn how to communicate with people. And one day, I got a call from the local TV station wanting to know if I wanted to come do weather. They heard me do the weather coverage, some of the events in the 70s. And they were going to pay me $1.90 an hour. I'm thinking, you're going to pay me to do weather? I mean, I'd pay you $1.90 an hour. And so I went over there, I was an engineering major. But this is a small market TV station in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, but that was in the summer of 1978, and that started an incredible journey that has not stopped. It's still rolling.
Wow. I mean, those stories are always so fun to listen to. Just real quickly, I too had a start in radio in 1976, and that broadcast bug, once it bites you, boy, it doesn't let go.
I was lucky enough. I caught the tail end of the Top 40 radio era, AM radio, and it was just magical. I mean, all the kids were listening to it. It was the most eclectic mix you'd be playing. The Bee Gees and then Led Zeppelin, the Carpenters, and then Lynyrd Skynyrd. And it was just an amazing time. And soon it would be over. It was near the end of it, but it I caught the tail end of it.
Yeah, I remember playing.
Yeah, Gary's told me a number of stories about that.
You go from Captain Tennille to Pink Floyd. There's some mix for you. Yeah. Brandon, you got another question for you?
Yeah, I do. I would like to ask you about something else here, and I might be able to. I'm going to jump on this here for a minute because we've already brought it up. Now, a few years ago, I did end up going ahead and getting my ham radio license. It's something I had thought about for a while and finally did it while we were all stuck at home with COVID. And we do have an episode of Twister Talk discussing ham radio. You've brought it up a little bit. Maybe if you could just kind of briefly go through that. Maybe describe what you consider to be the most significant situation that you've experienced where ham radio played such a key role in forecasting and spotting. I know you had a very prominent role in one of those. And would you encourage would-be storm spotters today, even with the prevalence of smartphones, to go ahead and get their ham license?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'll give you one example. 30 years ago today, we're recording this on March 27th, we had an F4 tornado that came through the eastern part of Alabama, and it hit a church during the morning worship service, a church called the Goshen United Methodist Church. It was Palm Sunday morning. And 20 people were killed in the church during the midst of an Easter drama. The 4-year-old daughter of the pastor was killed, and it's an unspeakable tragedy. But that morning, had my ham radio gear as always, and right on the scene immediately was a ham radio operator, and he reported that back to us. Otherwise, we'd have no idea. Landlines weren't working. There was no cell communications back in those days, and that enabled us to call a tornado emergency for the cities downstream from there. And that's just one example. And today, phones are great. They're marvelous. Digital technology is great. But one of these days, we're going to have a Carrington event. If you don't know what that is, you might want to go look it up. This was a geomagnetic storm back in the 1800s. And if we had it today, it could knock out cellular communications and power for days and weeks and maybe months in some cases. We could have an EMP. We could have a terrorist attack where everything that you think works doesn't work. Your cell phone is a brick. And with the old analog amateur radio communication paths, it's old school, but it's good school. And I'm just saying, and even today during tornado emergencies, cell service can go down. The ham radio reports are often first on the scene. So if you're serious about being a spotter, a chaser, or a volunteer in the weather enterprise, having a ham radio license is certainly a good idea.
I certainly agree with you on urging anybody that would want to become a part of this to pursue their ham license.
And we hope you've enjoyed our interview with James Spann. Our interview with James will continue in the next episode of Twister Talk. We'll be talking about the Dixie outbreak and about his own life and how the struggles he's overcome made him a better weather forecaster. So for Brandon and Sue, I'm Gary. Thanks for joining us for Twister Talk. We'll see you next time.